Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need, without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/EarnYourLeisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/EarnYourLeisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
All right, guys. Welcome back. EYL, Hometown Heroes Edition.
This is special.
For sure. For sure. Nashville, Tennessee. A lot of people, it's surprisingly, a lot of people have been asking us to come to Nashville.
Yeah.
And so it was ironic.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it was ironic when Troy hit me up. He told me about these good brothers, and they got a dope business going. Then we looked into it, we realized that they were serial entrepreneurs. And even better than that, they're childhood friends.
Absolutely.
So we got EJ, Clinton, and Derek from Slim and Huskies, and they're a pizza empire. And they have...
Artisan pizza.
Artisan pizza. Artisan pizza. I like that. They have three locations in Nashville, one location in ATL. One location in Memphis on the way, and another location in ATL on the way as well.
Yeah, Sacramento too. They ain't playing. They had an adventure west.
Yeah.
Cali love.
Nah. So these guys is dope. Once again, they're from Nashville, Tennessee, and they have businesses in the community. They're employing the community.
Yeah.
And it was really inspiring story when we looked into it. So first and foremost, thank you guys for rocking with us. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome to the table, man. Welcome to the table.
Yeah,
it was crazy. We were at an Atlanta event, and after we spoke, it was like everybody was from Tennessee. It was like, yo, I'm from Tennessee. Y'all need to come. I'm like, oh, y'all know these guys? They're like, oh, yeah, 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 we know them. I'm like, oh, bad. Stay tuned.
Shout out to Tennessee. All right, so how does this all start as far as, because I want to talk about the first business that you guys had. But before we even talk about the business, so you guys grew up together, right? Yeah. So, you know, especially coming from working class neighborhoods and things of that nature, we're not always trained to be entrepreneurs. We're trained to, like, get a quote-unquote good job. Right, like a lot of times. So, as three young men, what made you have that entrepreneurial bug and want to actually looking to go into business?
For myself, I think, you know, it was, again, like everybody else, you know, working class, like you said, we train to, you know, finish high school, go to college, get a good job, and you know, that's where it ends.
Buy the house with the picket fence.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But for me, man, I just never felt good with that. Even when I was in, when I got into, you know, corporate America or whatever, the federal government, whatever that I was working for, it's like I never felt good about it. You know what I mean? I was thinking to myself, like, why, like this can't be, like, life. You know what I'm saying? Like, it ain't nothing wrong with having a job. You know what I'm saying?
This can't be life.
I'm waking up, going to work, come home, go work out, eat. Go to sleep,
repeat,
do it all over
repeat,
again. You know
repeat,
what I'm saying?
Repeat.
Like, this ain't fun. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, and I always had that entrepreneur spirit in me. You know, we would talk about it in the dorm room all the time about starting our own business and stuff. So, you know, for me, it was just like, it didn't feel like it was my purpose, so to speak.
So, y'all all went to school together, right?
Yeah.
Tennessee State University?
Tennessee State.
Yeah. But so you two went to elementary school.
Yep.
Y'all all met at high school. Then y'all all went to football.
So these two.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking you was a quarterback.
Yeah.
After the games, he was the quarterback. He was setting up all the parties.
The plays. All right.
He was slanging the liquor.
I know my role and I played.
Yeah. Running the routes.
Yeah. Yes,
All right. So in college, when does the first business start? Because the first business, you have a trucking company, eco-friendly moving trucking yeah. company, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the play for that? Because that actually becomes really successful. But you start that with $1,000, right? Is that correct?
So what happened was, so we graduated Tennessee State 2007. We stayed in contact with each other. You know, we all three went our separate ways. Working out, I worked in finance, sales, and Mo kind of did a little bit of everything. And man, we graduated, kind of went our separate ways for a while. And just stay in contact with each other about being entrepreneurs and starting a business together. So in 2009, Mo had was working as an air traffic controller. They moved my boy up to Saginaw, Michigan.
Moving on up.
My boy up there stressing, so he like, bro, we got to expedite this, man. Let's figure this out. He said, man, he came with the idea to do a moving company. He had worked for a moving company while we were in college. And I'm like, I'm against it initially. I'm like, man, that seemed like hard work. It's cold, it's hot, it's heavy stuff. I'm like, nah. Then I thought about it for about a week, and I said, let's do it. So we all each put $1,000 a piece into an account. Maybe, you know, maybe somebody had a little less, a little bit more, but roughly $1,000 a piece in an account. And that was January 2010, and by April 2010, we was in business.
Hey, why are you on that topic? I want to clarify, we did an interview with CBS World News.
I saw it.
And they chopped it up. It made it sound like we started Slimmer Huskies with $3,000.
Oh.
So just want to clarify that on here that we started the moving company with $3,000, not Slimmer Huskies.
Okay.
So when you start the moving company, it's you three.
Us three.
And y'all, how do y'all attract in business, right?
So the crazy thing about it, this was 2010, so that's back when Groupon was hot. So, you know, we spent the money on flyers, a bootleg website, you know, something customers could go at least read our mission statement. And we put a Groupon out there that we would do 2 hours of moving for like $89. And fell asleep over Mo's mom's house. We actually would park the U-Hauls outside Mo's mom's house because we didn't have any trucks, so we would rent, you know, U-Hauls. Mm-hmm. And so woke up the next morning and we had this little cell phone that was attached to the business. And I woke up, and it was like 60 missed calls, and I was like, "Whoa!" I got to hop on this. So, end up actually calling out my side job that day, and was just fielding calls. And we booked, at the end of the day, we booked like 150 moves.
First day?
First day.
Wow.
First,
you had 100. So, all right, how do you facilitate that, though?
So, basically, we made a commitment. We were like, you know what? We can make a lot of money with this, but the number one goal is to walk out of this thing with a great reputation. And so we basically, you know, made the schedule to where at least two of us could always be on the truck. You know, we all work side jobs. This is just the thing we were building. So, you know, we would make the schedule so that, you know, we could always do the move. And every now and then, if it was a big move, somebody had to, you know, get called. Like, hey, man, you got to leave work, man.
You got called out today, man.
Somebody's sick. I don't know. And so we scheduled out, like, within, like, 3 months over the summertime. You know, we broke a lot of stuff. You know, we were amateurs, but we, you know, made a lot of people smile that were typically stressed out about, you know, moving.
Yeah.
And so we turned that, you know, just into, you know, 4- and 5-star reviews all over the internet. And now we had a business that we could market and push, you know, in an industry that people just hated to work with.
Yeah, move was, I mean, it was very strategic how y'all went about business. Y'all changed the typical experience. Like, when I hired a movie company, it's like, oh, whatever. Yeah. But y'all were very intentional about how y'all were going to change the industry. You want to talk about some of the things y'all did that were different?
Yeah, so we just wanted to be, we studied the movie industry before we jumped in the game. Like, we did our research. So it was like, man, what are the things people hate about moving? And it was like customer service was one. They felt like, you know, that moving companies didn't pay attention to details, just all about booking the move, and that was it. So we went in on that end. It was like, yo, we got to make sure that the customer service is on point. So how do we do that? We make sure that, you know, we picked up the phone when they called, paid attention to the details. We booked the jobs with friendliness, so to speak. It was an eco-friendly moving company, so it was all about, you know, big smiles, being friendly, being professional. We put the movers and even ourselves in collar shirts and khakis, so we all were uniformed. And when we walked up, it looked like we were professional, you know what I mean? And the trucks, we wrapped them and made them, like, nice, bright, you know what I mean? Like, it was our promotion, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then we ran the trucks on biodiesel fuel, so B20. So there was an eco-friendly play on it. And then recycled all the moving materials for our customers, so we would come back, pick up the moving boxes, the plastic, recycle it for them, and then planted 2 trees after every move through a nonprofit. So we just
that's a lot.
Try to flip it to make us more attractive than the next ordinary move.
No, that's a good story because you got to separate yourself. And it's always in any line of business, you got to see how you can separate yourself, yeah, right?
Right.
So, like, for you, for do the eco-friendly play, mm-hmm, and it's like, I mean, it's a good thing to do, yeah, but it also separates you from the million other companies that's, mm-hmm, just doing the same thing, exactly, but it's like they're not eco-friendly. Like, right, you know what I'm saying? So right, it's like if it's sometimes the slightest edge can make a big difference, exactly, in business.
Another thing we did too, we focused on scale. We focused on, so we said we want to have the appearance of a much larger business,
yep,
right? So one of the biggest compliments it sticks with me. A lot of times we're going on these jobs and someone will be like, are y'all a franchise? Like, yeah, where y'all out of? Like, you know what I mean? And for me, that was like, okay, we're doing this thing right. Because yeah, people, you know, we would send out emails before the move. We had these confirmation calls. We would, you know, call you when we were on the way. We did the small details that, like, made it seem like we were a larger company, yeah, than what we were. You know, at the time, we might have had 1 or 2 trucks.
So I'm thinking in my mind, right? Y'all went, at what point did y'all go from U-Hauls to getting your own trucks?
So we were about... So
eight months in.
We started April, had our first truck in September.
We made a nice little trip down to Atlanta, Georgia, yeah, from Nashville, and we purchased a vehicle also known as Little Soldier. It was a 99. Had, you know, 99,000 miles on it. And, yeah. We brought it back to Nashville.
So the first 3,000, you pretty much, that was just like startup costs, and you was actually using U-Haul trucks, like renting trucks.
Yep.
You was working yourselves. Y'all three was working? Yeah. Did you have any other workers?
And not initially. Okay. Like family, I think. Yeah, 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 younger brother.
Like just sporadically, yeah, pay, yeah, somebody like $100, whatever.
Yeah.
And then,
yo, bro, I need
but you. It's all money, and you keep all the money. And then as you get enough money, now you actually purchase your first truck.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
Another important fact, too, is at the time, so 2010, Clint and I ended up going back to school. So I'm in grad school at the time. Clint's in grad school. Y'all working full time. Mo was in his first year of law school. So, mm-hmm, he, you know, wanted to be
Man, I don't know. I was just doing something. Keep the wolves off my back. Like, you leaving this good job? You know what I mean? You leaving this good job being air traffic controller to start a moving company? Like, man, I'm going to law school.
I'm doing that too.
Family. That was the family. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So we were working, man, like crazy, man. We were going. We were going full-time jobs, full-time moving.
I like what you said too, also as far as like creating the appearance that you always have to, you can't let people know that you're not as big as you are, because perception is extremely important. Absolutely. So it's like people will judge you what they think of you, yeah. Right? And it's like even like, it's like a lot of times, like I've heard stories of like people have their wives or their partner as like answering their phone for them, yeah. Like acting like they're their receptionist. Yeah. Just to kind of create the illusion that they have a receptionist, right? And it's like little stuff like that is like, it goes a long way, because it's like, if you go to the doctor, right? And the doctor is the one checking, you're going to be scared.
Yeah.
If the dentist is the one that's behind the table.
It's like the commercial. Yeah, I'm doing all right. Nah, I got my license just got renewed. Don't worry about it.
I'm nervous. Like if I could just call my dentist on the cell phone, go there, they're waiting for me. That's a red flag. Like, you got to be able to book an appointment. Yeah,
right.
And I say this all the time. Even, like, I like to talk to barbers a lot, because I feel like that's a business that is becoming more of a business. But for a long time, they missed that. And it's like, you can just walk in whenever you want. Yeah, you got to wait 8 hours. Like, nah, you got to schedule an appointment. Mm-hmm. Da, da, da. So for you to have that early on, I think that was brilliant. Yeah. So at what point do you guys, like, really start to take off? Because I know at some point the business starts to really scale up.
Well, I wanted to touch on that point that you just made about, you know, appearing like you're bigger. So what we were able to do was departmentalize, you know, ourselves as business partners. So, you know, Mo was great in operations. So he was chief operations. EJ was chief of finance. He was good with numbers. He was a financial analyst at his old job. I was marketing. And so we would, you know, we became, you know, COO, CFO, and CMO. And so instead of us all, you know, going out on the jobs and, hey, yeah, this is just my business partner, whatever, like, no, like, we all have three lanes that we're working on at the same time. So, you know, if you call the business, you know, and you ask for the CFO, you know, I'm going to forward you to EJ. You know, so we appeared bigger, but there was always a bigger vision there because we started off that way, you know, versus trying to work towards it.
So yeah, so the scaling, when do you take off when you get your first truck? Is that like what really starts taking this to the next level?
At the time, we were pretty steady at that time.
Okay.
Right? And we, you know, man, it's crazy. Like, we were like guerrilla marketing. Like, so I'm not sure what would be comparable, but imagine like Lenox, like the Lenox Mall area.
Okay.
In Nashville, was an area called Green Hills. So we're literally like have our truck parked behind us with some signs. Our slogan at the time was "Why not move green?" So you know, you see this shock value, mm-hmm. Three young black dudes with a moving truck behind them with these signs like "Why not move green?" So we were just like guerrilla marketing, like really out there making calls, you know, utilizing technology. The Groupon helped a lot. So
shout out to your CMO.
Yeah, word. So probably around the time we got our first truck. So after being in business a year, we were really like pretty consistent. We were pretty consistent with business.
Okay.
And we bootstrapped for what, about 3 years?
Yeah.
So we didn't spend a dollar personally for almost, you know, 36 months.
All the money just went back into the business.
Yeah, went back into marketing. We found and researched, you know, areas where we could, you know, foster our business. The National Business Incubation Center, we moved into there, had like a 500 square foot office space. You know, for very cheap, you know, rent. And then we moved from there to 1,000 square foot, then from there to 1,800 square foot. And eventually they were like, hey, y'all got to go. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? How many trucks do you have at that point when you get to the 18,000 square feet?
I think we were riding like 8 trucks. We filled up the whole parking lot.
And then you talking about that, it was an 8A program?
So, yeah, SBA 8A program, which is basically a federal contracting program. In 2014, kind of wind back a little bit, we made a decision to say, man, this isn't moving company. It's cool, but we have to figure something else out because it's a rough industry. You know what I mean? Dealing with employees, dealing with customers, it's not an easy industry to operate in. So mm-hmm. Mo did a lot of research and it was like, man, it's this program called 8A. Like, let's, you know, submit the paperwork to get in and that'll kind of put us in a different bracket of customer, right? Mm-hmm. So in 2014, we were fortunate enough to get 8A certified. It took us about a year. You go through a ton of paperwork, a ton of like background checks, credit checks, all kind of stuff to be able to do, be in this federal contracting program. And so from there, you know, we were awarded our first, so we were in the program for about 30 days and were awarded $500,000 contract to do some moving in Fort Campbell.
Oh,
so
wow.
We were doing a lot of Department of Defense moving. You know, we just kind of found our sweet spot with the moving company. And then we said, okay, moving is cool, but that's like a one-time type of thing. Like once we move somebody, it's over.
Right.
So we started kind of branching out a little bit. So we got into some trucking, some over-the-road trucking, some hotshot deliveries, got into some staffing on a federal contract level. And, man, just really from there, just kind of took off with the 8A program.
So it's 8-8 or AA?
8. So the number 8 and then the letter A. So SBA 8A program.
And it's a government program for contract?
So it's a federal contract, well, federal government program for minority businesses, minority-owned businesses.
Okay.
But they have to be what they quote-unquote disadvantaged.
Okay.
So whether that be disadvantaged by race, disadvantaged by gender, disadvantaged by the resources, so, you know, banks not really messing with you, you know what I mean? But it's a long, lengthy process, but it's basically a set-aside. So the federal government has these set-asides. They got 8A set-asides. They got woman-owned set-asides. They got veteran-owned set-asides, disabled vet set-asides, right? So with the 8A program, you get $4 million and under. You can get a $4 million and under contract without having to bid, so to speak. So basically the federal government, if you meet the criteria, you did your research, and you have the resources to complete a job, they'll essentially kind of give you sole sources, what they call the contract. Now, if it's under $4 million. If it's over $4 million, you got to bid.
So you're obviously, your background working for the government, doing your research, that helped you, right?
No,
it did not. I'm thinking like, yo, that those are two pieces. So it didn't help you.
No,
I know it's a long list, but what are some of the criteria that y'all had to meet?
To get in the program, should be broke for real.
That's easy.
You know what I mean? And then you had to be in business for 2 years, so you had to show a track record at the very least that you know how to run a business successfully. Running a business, you can't have. At that time, you couldn't have, your network couldn't be more than like, what, 250,000.
Combined or individually?
Individually.
Okay.
To get into the program, what else?
An underrated thing that you need is patience, because it just takes, man, so long. Like, you'll have someone assigned to your case, you would, and, you know, they may or may not look at your paperwork fully, and it's literally like we're submitting like 150 to 200 pages worth of documents. You know what I mean? Applications, credit checks. You know what I mean? All kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Background checks.
Background checks. So it was just, it's a very lengthy process. So if you have patience, like a lot of times in business, they can get you places. Mm. So we just had patience.
Just,
man,
like online, you just go online and just do it?
At the time, it wasn't really, was it online?
Some was online, and a lot of it was just like, yo, you got to pack it. You got to bind it, and we sent it in. And then wait, and then we'll get a little email saying that, okay, your packet was reviewed, and then they will send back a letter saying, you get this, you got to change this. Boom. So we did this for a year.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Before we got the certification. But, I mean, it's an awesome program, man. It's just, I don't think enough of us know about it.
I didn't know about it until, I mean, I know there's a lot of different types of programs like that, but that specific program I haven't heard about. And I think a lot of people aren't aware of that there are resources are available that should be utilized if you can. But knowledge is power. It's like, if you don't know about it, then you can't take advantage of it.
And this is one of those things, like, if you think about it, federal government buys everything.
Everything
from construction to pharmaceuticals to moving services to food, everything, uniform. So if you have a viable business, a product to sell, you have patients. You meet those criteria, it's something worth looking into. Definitely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, all right. So you sell a business, right? So you build the business, it's going well, and you sell it for, how much did you sell it for?
A little over $1 million.
So how did that process work as far as, like, how did they come to you? Why did you decide to sell? Like, what's the inner workings of that?
Well, we were working super hard to build this business. And like EJ said, you know, the return business just wasn't as great, because once you move, Yeah, that's it. And so we felt like we were just so knowledgeable from all these lessons we had learned from this, the first business and something like moving that was so tough, that we were just ready to move into something different that people love. You know, we were tired of, you know, trying to work out kinks every day and keep our customers, you know, happy if, you know, we might have chipped something or, you know, any type of customer service issues, because moving was ranked like number three most stressful industries, you know. And so we were ready to, you know, really test our talents in something other than that. And Nashville was becoming this huge hospitality hub at the same time. So we were seeing a lot of our peers opening up restaurants, bars, and it was just a good time to get in something else where we're from. And so we were, at the time, traveling around America, and there were places we would go, like Harlem, where we would see, you know, blacks just opening dope businesses with crazy concepts and crab cocktail bars. And, you know, it just seemed like something that we could do in our own neighborhood, because in the South, you know, it's a little different. You know, Atlanta may be an exception because it's like a mini Wakanda, you know what I mean? But
not even mini.
Yeah, it might be Wakanda. But you know, Nashville, we're from, where blacks are a huge minority, you just don't see, you know, a lot of great ideas, you know, flourish in our neighborhoods. And so we were like, man, let's find something that everybody loves and let's drop it in the hood.
So, like, how was that? Because I'm interested, like, when you sell a company, do you negotiate that, or do they just come and like, all right, look, we want to buy it. All right, this is a good idea. Yeah. Was that a hard, like?
I'm thinking the same thing. Like, are you creating the valuation for the company, or, and so what's that process?
We made a real intentional decision to sell the business, right?
Okay. You pushed it.
Yeah, we pushed it. So Mo was like, man, look, it's time.
Get out.
He said, I'm tired of carrying these couches on my back. Like, man.
So he pushed us getting in, pushed us getting out. All right. So,
get in, get out.
Yeah. So
OG classic, right?
2016, and we just made a, so what was it, 2015, 2016, we just made a conscious choice to like, man, look, let's figure out how to sell a business. Like, we, you know, didn't know what to do. So we found a company that kind of helped us, you know, put together our valuation, put together like a presentation of who we were, the type of business we were doing, our customer base. So we had a little bit of help, and it was not that everything went perfectly, but it would have been hard to do it had we not done that. You know what I mean? Because we just didn't have the resources, the network of qualified buyers. So it was about an 8 or 9 month process. We had a lot of different meetings. We had our number, and of course, you know, it's all negotiation. Yeah.
So that's interesting, though, because we haven't even spoke about that on the podcast before. How does that work? Like, what company do you, like, the company goes out and finds buyers for you?
Yeah. So it's like a broker. Yeah, like a broker. And they went out, and after, you know, we got the whole packet done and valuation and everything like that, like, they have the database to have these, you know, these people that, whether it be high net worth, you know what I mean, or whatever the case.
All the corporations.
Yeah, it could be like a competitor of yours, like,
whatever.
All right.
Yeah, they have this database to where they find, you know, interesting.
And then they take a percentage off of the sale.
Yeah, they take a percentage off.
What was that day like, man? Y'all started with $800 to $1,000, and now 7-figure contract being signed. What was that day like for y'all?
Relief. You know what I mean? But only for a short moment, because we was already on the move to the next thing. Yeah. Like, we had already started, we sold the business 2017. We'd already started working on the pizza business 2015.
So in perspective, we sold it in January 2017, opened a restaurant with March 2017.
So you already had the next play already in mind.
Yeah,
So you go to these companies and you say, I want to sell my business. Is it like a certain criteria that you got to meet? Like, all right, you got to be hitting at least $250 a year for them to even look at you?
No, I mean, it wasn't necessarily like a, I mean, I guess I would say, like, if it was a criteria, so to speak, it's like you got to say what you have to be what you are, what you say you are, and you have to have these numbers that's attractive, you know, for people to want to buy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there's business out here that wasn't hitting the numbers that we had, but they still sold. It's just about the resources. You know what I mean? It's like, man, it's maybe somebody out there that's got a business that they only making $500,000 a year, right? But, you know, they may have turned that over six, seven times if they know the process. They know what people want to buy, you know what I mean, how to sell it. It's just You know, it's just about resources and the know-how, honestly.
I think two things on top of that is we spent a lot of time like putting together processes and procedures. Mm-hmm. So we went in and said, man, we're going to show our guys, we want this to be easy, right? So our guys knew how to, you know, everything from when they got there, what to do throughout the day. So that first confirmation call, they had their directions, they would get there, they would know what to say. They would know what to do, so how they would know how to put pads down on the house, how to wrap furniture. So we literally documented the procedures, right? Yep. So that's the first thing. The second thing was we showed profitability. So we were, you know, we were making sure that we were profitable. So for me, in my opinion, I think those were the two biggest things. So yeah, when true. We were presenting this business to somebody, they could basically have a manual. So it was easy.
So when, that's what I was going to ask you. So when you sold it to like the blueprint with like you have like your everything. Instruction booklet.
Everything.
And it's like, all right, these are the trucks, these instruction booklet. This is now you just take it, like just pass the baton pretty much.
Yeah. From operational to financial to marketing.
Yeah. Did they keep the business open or?
Nah, it's still operating.
Different name, same name or?
Same name.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Another, but the people that purchased from us, they sold it.
To somebody else.
Yeah,
that's an important conversation. Like I said, I wasn't even planning on having that, but we haven't spoken about that on the podcast yet. And that's business, and it's all about learning.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of the podcast is to educate people.
Yeah.
And it's like you don't really see that side of like people talk all the time. Like you start a business, you sell a business. They talk about it, but how does that work? Like you know what I'm saying?
We're not putting an ad out for that.
Yeah, we're not doing that. You know what I mean? It's like we've been blessed to be in contact and have mentorship with you know a couple of guys in Nashville that's like done it over and over again. You know what I mean? But and they're black, you know what I'm saying? But we find out that man, you know, we were a commodity being, you know, 29 years old selling business in the black community, that's a commodity, but it's like, yo, it don't have to be.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But it's just again, it's about knowledge is power, like people do this all the time.
Yeah, you know what I mean? The exposure is important, man.
Exposure, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said.
Sell that first one.
Yeah.
You're going to want to sell
another.
Hint.
People, like, especially like black entrepreneurs, we don't know when to let go.
You know what
I mean? For us, it was like, not only did we have another venture that we were it's already in motion. This thing was opening in March of 2017, but it was also just time. You know what I mean? It was just time to sell it. It was time to, you know, move on and let our talents be better utilized in another industry. So.
Yeah. It's like Elon Musk. I have to cut you off, but Elon Musk. So Elon Musk starts PayPal.
Yep.
And sells PayPal for $200 million. Mm-hmm. And then he buys SpaceX. And then rolls that into Tesla.
Yeah.
So it's like when he could have just been happy with PayPal. He would have been a multi-millionaire.
Yeah, I think most of us would have been happy.
But now he's a multi-billionaire.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, a lot of times, especially in our communities, like the problem with small businesses is that it stays small.
Because
you can't scale it, and the mind is mindset is everything.
Yeah.
So if it's like it's nothing wrong with having just a small business. But like you said, I mean, the lifespan of a business has a lifespan.
Yeah, man.
And it's nothing wrong with flipping it into doing something else.
Yeah. And we kept the 8A portion of it too. So we kept the federal contracting portion of that business.
Oh yeah?
So we still have it.
You still do the business?
It's a nine year program.
9 year
program. Oh wow.
Yeah.
So y'all can create two or three more businesses in the same program?
You still do the moving?
No. So well, we have some moving contracts still, but we do staffing with the federal government.
Okay, that aspect. Okay.
So we kept that portion of the business. We told the buyers that we're going to keep the 8A portion. Y'all just get the moving portion. See what I'm saying?
You are now looking at one smart black boy.
Nah, that's dope, man. I'm glad we had that conversation because, like I said, that's something that I even learned some things. I didn't even know that there was, like, private companies that you can go to. Yeah. I just thought it was, like, people just approaching you or you just approach an individual person. But it makes sense. Man. A broker, take their fee, middleman.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Little stuff like that could just change somebody's life.
I tell people all the time, there's more ways than one to make a meal out here, man. You can make some money selling business like you're selling real estate. You know what I'm saying?
The middleman strikes again.
Yeah.
At the same time, you're taking the scroll on Instagram, you can hop on these broker sites and just scroll at people selling businesses. You know, yeah. You never know what you might come up on.
Yeah, that's a fact. All right. So in the next segment, we're going to talk about the flip into what you guys are doing now, Slim and Huskies, and how that came about. All right, so now we're going to go into what you guys are doing now, Slim and Husky. So, all right, so you got the play already in motion where you start the one business and you sell it. But right after you sell it, you got the plan in motion for the pizza. But why a pizza? Is it a pizzeria? Is that or a pizza experience? I don't want to.
Pizza experience might be better,
experience.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a pizza art gallery.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why? All right, so three African-American young men. Everybody likes pizza. It's universal. But traditionally, it's soul food, things exactly, of that nature, fish, things of that nature.
We looking for chicken wings.
Chicken wings.
I said artisan pizza.
So, it's a good thing you're black when you said that. what made you want to do a pizza shop? Like, how does that come about?
Well, I would say,
it was his idea. Now.
we like to build our businesses with systems, and we felt like, let me say this: when we were operating a moving company, we were riding around the country all the time, and pizza was like that common thing we would eat, every time we were on the road. And so when we start thinking about, what type of restaurant we want to open up, we were like, let's build something where we can make sure that the flavor's bomb, but we can, make it simple. And create systems that, we can build off of. So we went into our first Slim and Huskies, with the intentions of opening up, 150 more. And so, we just needed something that we could get our hands on and make simple and replicate, over and over and over again. And we knew that pizza was one of those things that put smiles on people's faces.
Yeah. Okay, we skipped the most important part.
Right.
How y'all got the name, man?
So Slim and Huskies is really a story. And it's a story about the three of us. And, when we were growing up, Mo and I, we would, like we are now, we were bigger kids. And so our moms used to have to shop for us in the Husky section, the Husky children section for clothing. And for people that ain't familiar with the Husky section, I just remember a bunch of silver tab jeans. And, the selection was small, so.
We definitely from the same era.
And so you see the other kids getting fresh, two rows over, and you're like, this is all I got to choose from. It's the Husky section. And so EJ, always being a skinny dude, like, he just never understood that. So he always got a kick out of that. And so we were actually on a road trip to Atlanta trying to figure out names. And I think it was Moses, we were just joking about, the Husky section. He was like, Slim and Huskies. So
pulling to a Wendy's.
Slim and Huskies. I like that. So, all right. So you guys are big on separating yourself from the pack. So even when you had the moving business, it was, you said you had uniforms and you had the plant tree, you had the whole eco play. So with Slim and Huskies, you just didn't open a regular pizzeria, right? You have a whole vibe to it. So can you talk about that as far as the difference that makes Slim and Huskies different? And then how did that come about? Like, was that strategically done? Like, we need to have put this in place to make us different from our competitors?
I'll talk about one of the differences first is the location we selected for our first restaurant. So, North Nashville is historically like a black neighborhood. You have Tennessee State, Meharry Fitz, so three HBCUs kind of all right next to each other pretty much. They share the same street. We're right in that area. Also in that area, if you can imagine, it's a food desert. So it's like you have like a high end area and then you have your fast food. So all your typical
McDonald's, stuff like that.
All the typical fast food restaurants, nothing in between, nothing that gives someone who lives over there like that middle experience, but quality product, a great atmosphere. So there's something that people could enjoy and be proud of. So we were looking around for different locations in the city. We were going to some of the popular areas, and it just didn't feel right. So we looked at a location on the street called Buchanan, which is heart of North Nashville. Buchanan has a rich business history for African-Americans and Jewish, in the Jewish community on this one street, as a former business district. What happened in that area, a highway was literally built through North Nashville, kind of broke up the businesses. So that area has a rich history of, the ups and downs, right? So we decided, we made a very conscious decision to say, man, let's put our restaurant in North Nashville in the hood. Mm. Man, people thought we were crazy, you know, smart people. You know, like, man, y'all tripping. Like, y'all tripping. Like, man, y'all should go to the Gulch, West End, like downtown, Green Hills. Like, man, y'all gonna put it right there. Who's gonna be the customers? Who's gonna afford this? What's the price point? Blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, it was just the visionary minds of the three of us to say, like, man, this is gonna work. And it's a purpose. You know what I mean? And it's the community that's right there is going to love this because mm-hmm. we're gonna build it in a way that they're gonna love this.
Yeah, when you say build, we're talking like, is the structure already there or are we just looking at lots? What are we talking about?
So, the structure was there already, but it needed some major renovation. I mean, some structural renovation. So we had beams that went up to hold the building up and just interior, exterior, like, I mean, it's a new building. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's the same four walls, but it was in bad shape. You know what I mean? Used to be a garage that my granddad found out was like, they used to be his spot. He used to go up there and kick it and drink with the homies. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's in the hood, man. But yeah, to your point, like what's different, and to piggyback on EJ, it's like, I think the biggest thing for us is, for me anyways, is the community piece. It's like, man, you know, you got all these restaurants, they pop up. They don't include the community. They don't embrace the community. You know what I mean? Especially these gentrified neighborhoods. It's like, oh, they just popping up. They just come in and they just making all the money. And it's people that, you know, look like them that's only in the restaurant. And yeah. It ain't for nobody in the community. You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like, so for us, it was like, man, we going to make this about the community 100%. And it's going to look like us. Gonna be us. We're gonna be unapologetically us. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We 90s kid. I mean, grew up, you know, born in the 80s, but 90s raised us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, man, it's gonna look like that. It's gonna be that. You know what I mean? And it's gonna be a reflection of the community, but at the same time, embracing the changes that's happening in the community. So yeah. we get, you know, these white millennials in. You know what I mean? Asians and. Everybody
coming in.
In the black, you know what I mean? It's like pulling all that together. Like, that's the difference for us that we think, I mean, for me anyways.
Yeah, we've highlighted our culture to a different degree than a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, we're used to, you know, soul food and wings and, you know, on a consistent level in our communities. And there's nothing wrong with that because we love that. But we just wanted to, you know, create a concept that, you know, show black excellence at the highest level, which is why we rolled in art, because art, you know, could express that for us yeah. to people that don't look like us and help them understand how we feel. We've got a quote on our original location on the ceiling from Arrested Development, just talking about, you Tennessee. Know, yeah, Tennessee, yeah. Tennessee, yeah. Yeah. Now I know the importance of history, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so, you know, we feel as though, you know, we've got to do a better job as a culture displaying who we are, because we know that the media is not going to give us any favors or help on that. So that's what we, you know, attempting to do with the restaurant.
Yeah, man. Yeah, very intentionally, like you said, you put it in these neighborhoods. One of the things I loved about it was, like, you looked at the unemployment rate in the neighborhood, right? I think you said in another interview you said 40% of the people who lived there were unemployed.
Yeah, that was on CBS. Yeah. They did their research, bro, and it was like astounding. Like, number one, 37208 in Nashville has the highest incarceration rate for black men in the country. Wow. Like the ages, it was like things like ages 35, like 17 to 35 or something like that, the highest in the country, bro. Wow. And that's where we are. Like, that's where the restaurant is in zip code 372.
Well, it's important to open up businesses, because, like I always say, it's like, you can't solve crime rate, you can't solve, you know, all of these problems that's in a lot of communities without business.
Yeah.
Business is the incubator.
Economics, bro.
It's not anything. Yeah. Even politics, like politics moves around money.
Yep.
So it's like business is like the only way you're going to stop these problems is people have money. If not, if you have free time on your hands, you don't have any money in your pocket, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So it's like the number one way to solve that is to give people opportunities.
Yeah, man.
business, employment, things of that nature. And I like what you said also, because like, so your spot has artwork in it and it's music playing. It's all vibe, right?
Yeah.
And so we had another guest on. Shout out to Sean Bullard. And he's a real estate developer in Philly. He has a coffee shop. And he was saying in his coffee shop, it's like spray painted. It looks like a tattoo parlor, but it's a coffee shop. Yeah. And the reason why he did it is because he's like, Starbucks is boring.
Yeah.
And people want it. And it's like, a lot of times people, you have to use who you are to your advantage.
Exactly.
A lot of times, especially us, like we try to like shy away from who we are, but that's really our advantage. Like even with the podcast, it's like, I think that's one of the business successes. Like we, the same era. So it's like, we use hip hop. We don't shy away from that.
Right.
But we're talking about high finance. Like, you know what I mean? We're not trying to like button it up and be super proper about it.
They like, yo, what should we wear to your events? I'm like, yo, we got hoodies on, man. Like, however y'all want to come, y'all
can
come.
Nah, but that's important. It's like, it's the new neo entrepreneurs where it's like, you know, like Derek Falcon said, you know, born in the 80s, grew up in the 90s, and we might wear our hatchbacks or Vapor Max, but this is what it is. But we're employing the guy with the suit and tie.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's important for people to understand that and to know that, like, that's your actual strength.
Yep.
It's not a weakness. It's a strength. And it's like, more people can relate to that than can just going in Domino's and just buying a pizza. It's like,
that's great. That was part of our first phone call. Like, when I was like, yo, man, I saw you had a house party on the wall. I'm like, that's my favorite movie. We connected right away. Like, yo, that's my favorite movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, we from the same era, bro.
Exactly.
Yeah. Another piece that I love is that a lot of times when people are getting jobs, transportation limits them. But you make it very intentional out your locations. You put it in walking distance so that the people in the neighborhood don't have to worry about taking a bus or getting a car. You can come and work by your feet.
It's a beautiful thing. We driving down the street and we seeing, you know, these Slim Husky shirts. Some going, you know, when the shift changes, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a beautiful thing to see employment in our communities, man. And it looks like us, it's by us, and not necessarily just for us, you know what I'm saying? Because we employ everybody, you know what I mean? But it's like, it's just good to see that, man. Like, involving the community to the point of not just taking a dollar, but also putting a dollar back in
it. No, it's empowering. And then also, so, high-end fast food is something that I've noticed is taking over, because it's like Chipotle, right? Even like Blaze Pizza.
Shake Shack.
Five Guys.
Yeah.
So it's like, when I say high-end fast food, like fast food, when I'm saying fast food, it's just like the food is getting cooked fast.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about fast food before, it's like McDonald's, Burger King. But now it's like, the high-end fast food, the price points are a little bit more, but it's like actually being made in front of you.
Right.
It tastes better. It's better for you.
Fresh.
And that's like the wave. So that's kind of like you guys kind of fall in that wave, right?
Yeah, we like people hear our story or, you know, or come check us out, and they're like, you know, they're like, man, these three black guys got this pizza shop. It's kind of fly on the inside, but. What really we feel like reels people in is the taste of the food, you know, the work we put into it behind the scenes. You know, all of these sauces sitting on the table right now, we make those from scratch, handmade, you know, in our operation in Nashville. And the same thing with our dough. We make our dough from scratch, you know, pizza sauce from scratch. We use, instead of using just mozzarella and provolone, which is like their basic pizza cheese blend, you know, we've got a multi-house cheese blend, you know, that nobody has ever used before, that we took, you know, we probably tried over 100 cheeses in our test lab, you know, to get to this point. And, you know, we had a science, we call it the Mad Pizza Science Lab, was the garage we purchased in the neighborhood before the restaurant opened up. And, man, we just spent hours and hours, you know, all day long, right? Even at the point where we were selling, you know, Green Truck, we were just in there just testing product because we wanted to give the neighborhood something that was, you know, good for them.
Yeah, y'all did something genius, man. And from that test lab, and maybe it was you, the CMO, you started giving out the pizzas for free.
Yeah. We, you know, we would invite people into the garage, and we would just, you know, have the surveys for them before we open, and we'd say, hey, you know, 1 out of 10, what do you like about the crust? 1 out of 10, what do you like about the sauce? Same thing with the cheese, this type of sauce, this type of pepperoni. And then we would compile that data, you know, and talk over the three of us. And we also brought in a guy, Chef Jason Williams, just kind of speed that process up for us and help us create what we wanted to mold. And once we felt like we had a good product to give to the public, You know, we were at that point where the restaurant was about to open, and instead of having a grand opening, we just opened up our shop between 5 and 8 for the first 2 weeks, and we announced to the neighborhood that you come get a free pizza, just help us train. You know, just keep in mind that we're trying to, you know, get our, you know, this is our first restaurant. We just want to be able to give our people real-time, you know, training. And so we were giving those pizzas out from 5 to 8. Of course, you know,
that was I'm thinking in my mind, yo, we having pizza every night. We lining up.
Lying down the street, you know, they're like, a drink's free? Like, nah, drinks ain't free.
You know, that's perfect. Yeah.
but the line, you know, started to go down the street, and then we were like, all right, I think we're ready. And then we opened up on Monday, March 14th, 2017. I'll never forget, like, that line just never stopped. The day we announced it was a grand opening, you had to pay now. You know, people were still outside ready to support.
Now, that's really a brilliant idea. It's like when you – especially, like, any new worker, it's going to be kinks. And it's like – that's the biggest thing. That's actually a really good idea because people will kill your business. The first thing that goes wrong is like, oh, the customer service is bad. They missed it up, da 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 da. So you got in front of that, expecting that there's going to be problems. Like, look, y'all getting free pizza, so you can't complain.
Right.
Free. But in the meantime, the workers are learning, and you're getting all the kinks out early. So now you're killing two birds with one stone because you're giving them free samples, which is going to hook them, as, you know, assuming the product is good. And then you're also giving yourself leeway to make mistakes without getting criticized. Right. And you're actually training your workers while there's no real pressure on them because nobody's paying. Like when you're getting something for free, you can't complain about it.
It can't be, I want my money back.
Even if you pay $1, even if you pay $1, people, oh my God, it's like the whole sky fell apart.
Yeah. Right.
So that was dope. That's really a genius idea. Like, whose idea was that?
Man, I think it was a collective.
Yeah.
That was, okay.
And part of that is, too, not to cut you off, but part of that, too, was like coming from the moving company experience, right? We said, man, customer service, we understood how important customer service was. We understood how important, like, training is. Because if you think about moving, you know, we had 9 trucks. So we might have 9 different businesses going on at one time, 9 different customers, 9 different groups of employees happening at one time. So those people can't go in someone's home and not know how to talk to a customer. They can't go in someone's home and not know how to wrap up a couch, right? So we understood, like, those two important factors, like customer service and training. How can we get these people trained in a way that's a controlled environment, and we're, like you said, not just throwing the product out there and risk criticism? So that's what we did.
Because the thing about it, not to cut you off, but the thing about it is that, and this is important for any business owner that employs people to understand, is that they're not going to look at the employee when something go wrong. They look at you. Like Starbucks, like a couple years ago, something happened in Philly. I think it was like a racist incident.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Starbucks has probably thousands of employees, right? One employee, they're not really looking at that. They're looking at Starbucks. Let's boycott Starbucks.
Company. Mm-hmm.
So it's like you might be in California, have no idea, and you have one worker that's just have a bad day, says something crazy to a customer. They're going to have a problem with that, but more, they're going to always look at your business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're going to blame you.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's really, it's crazy when you think about it, but it's a lot of pressure. And that's why it's extremely important to train, customer service.
Yep.
And to, you know, a lot of times customer service goes a long way. And I think a lot of businesses really don't fully understand that.
And not even that, we're perfect, man. We still evolving and, you know, working on our training program and trying to get better each and every day. So it's still a ton of things. Like, we literally, none of us, I never worked in a restaurant ever before until, you know, we started.
That's crazy. Y'all have no background in being chefs and no culinary experience.
No. I worked in a hot dog spot.
We're going to take that. Moe's hot dogs.
Yeah, Moe's side notes. Side jobs. I had a bunch of them.
Yeah. So you put together the blueprint of how to make the actual pizza.
Yeah.
And then this is the formula that all the workers follow.
Yeah.
Who put together that blueprint?
Man, we all did. We, in the pizza lab, man, before we saw the movie, The Founder, have y'all seen
it? I haven't saw it, but I heard I'm going to watch it.
McDonald's story.
So it's like, man, before we saw that movie, and Jason came in, he saw us like putting these processes together, like, all right, like the oven needs to be here, and the refrigerator needs to be here, and you know, we want zero turnaround or we don't want our employees to have to turn around much, we want a straight line and all the type of stuff. All these processes, like, we were doing that in the pizza lab. Like, so we put together how the pizza goes in, how many pepperonis goes on in the layout and all that type of stuff, like how many cuts to make, like all the way, every single detail about the restaurant we created, the three of us along with Jason, and some feedback from the employees. You know what I mean? Like, we value our employees that much to where, like, they're the front line, so they can help us make things better. But in the beginning, it was us. Like, we were just putting all these processes together, because going back to the moving company, we understood that, man, for us to be profitable, for us to, you know, at least be able to go to sleep at night, we got to have these processes.
And it's set up in a way where, you know, we can't be in all the restaurants at the same time, and that's the goal, is to, like, make sure things are running the same everywhere. So at 7 a.m. in Nashville, our prep teams are doing the same thing as they're doing in Atlanta at 8 a.m. You know, everything is repetitive.
Yeah, that's what Derek Falcon has said, restaurant owner from Baltimore, and he was saying, like, the difference between, you know, your uncle's burger shop and McDonald's is that, you know, McDonald's has, they don't have the best burger in the world, but they got a brand name, they got a system in place, and scalability looks like it. Your uncle, he might have the best burger ever, but there's really no system in place. The brand is not really strong, and it's just one-offs. Like, scalability does not look likely.
Yeah. And the problem with that is consistency. It's like, man, you go somewhere and you love that first time you go. It's like awesome. Like, man, it's just the best burger. It's the best experience ever. Then you go back and it's something totally different. The burger might be okay. The price might be different. It's just all these different things, because it's without processes and procedures and something that you're building to scale, you can't have consistency.
That takes patience. You know, like, you have to really be committed to the details of things. Like, for example, with us, we walk in a restaurant, we've got a standard where our employees can only have one button undone on their collar shirts. You know, a lot of people might just walk past that. You know, a lot of people might, you know, you can't have a white T-shirt underneath our black, you know, shirts. A lot of people might walk past that, you know, on our crust. You know, we want a half an inch of crust, you know, so basically your pinky finger, you know, surrounding the edge of the crust. And so, you know, we pay, like, small, attention to detail about those things, but that stuff takes time, because when you systemize, you got to understand those little details I just got through talking about, it might be, you know, 500 more, but you got to be able to package it in a way that's simple enough for somebody to understand it on a day-to-day.
So after the success of the first one, when do you decide, like, you know what, we can do this again, let's replicate it somewhere else in the city?
6 months later.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, man. We it was basically out of need, though, because, I mean, the first spot is just super small, so we didn't really have, like, a prep kitchen, and we couldn't offer the full concept with the cinnamon rolls, and, you know, I mean, we couldn't cater, we couldn't do Uber Eats, we couldn't do any of the third party deliveries, so. Especially out of necessity, so we was a building across the street from us that just so happened to come available, and you know, it's power to the community. We built a relationship with the guy that was in it. He was like, "Hey, I'm about to leave." I was like, "Dang, okay, like, yo, we got to jump on this." Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So we built that out and opened the rollout by Cinema Huskies, which is our, like, express location.
Okay,
handles the catering and third party and walk ups and stuff like that, app orders. Opened that in what, October, no, November, November 2017.
So first year.
Yeah.
That was quick.
So I wanted to talk about that, the real estate play, but before I don't want that to go with people's heads, what you just said is extremely important. Big things are rarely the problem in life. Sometimes you have, like, big issues. Small issues add up over time. The little things are the real problems. It's like little stuff that you look past every day, it adds up. And you start letting little things slide here, little things. It's like a relationship, right? Like, it's not like sometimes it's like a major incident. But most of the times it's like, come in late. You know what I'm saying? You leave your clothes on the floor. It's just little things like this. And then before you know it, it's like, what happened? Because it was never addressed.
Yep.
And as a business owner, that's extremely important. It's like you a lot of times it's like, I'll just let this slide. It was just bad. He's having a bad. No, mm-hmm. You got to address this. Because you got to get out in front of it. If not, now you just opened up the floodgates. And it's so many little things that
you can't stop it now.
Yep.
So, but the real estate, you guys said that you actually own like 60% of the real estate. So that's important because like restaurants is hard business. And one of the main reasons how I see it is that it's overhead. Yeah. Rent, you got a location, you got to rent it. And that's why another episode, like I said, I keep referring to this episode. It's a really good episode about the restaurant, episode 11, where he's used mixed-use properties because he gets the cash flow from upstairs. Well, I don't know how it is in Tennessee, but like in up where we live, it's like some properties, like you have like a restaurant on the bottom and then people live up top.
Yeah, same thing.
Okay, yeah. So the mixed-use properties is like the way he explained it was brilliant because he's like, no, I don't have the same pressure as like just renting a storefront because now I'm getting 50% of my rent of my mortgage actually is coming from the rent from the tenants upstairs. So now it takes less pressure off me. And we see restaurants close all the time because it's like the rent that you have to pay is so much. And then it's kind of sporadic if people come in and out, but you still got to pay it. So was that the play as far as the real estate or like what was that mindset instead of just renting, like actually owning some of the spots?
I think the play initially for us was just to own in our neighborhoods. You know what I mean? I think it was just pretty much that simple for us. Like, we want to own, you know, we want to buy the block, so to speak. Like, mm-hmm. we want to be owners of the property that we were going into. And you know, we kind of took the McDonald's approach to it. And, I mean, yeah, but again, you know, we talked earlier, it's like, it's a lot of capital that's involved in that they can take away from the actual operation. So now we had to go back and kind of fine tune, like, what's the focus here? You know what I mean? Like, you know, what are we doing? Are we going to be a real estate company or are we going to be a restaurant? You know what I mean? Yeah. And can we find a fine line with that? And I think we have, but ownership for us was part of it, controlling if we're going to be paying somebody, you know, $14,000 in rent, like we need to be paying ourselves.
So how do you how do you finance it? Are you doing that from the profits made from the trucking company deal, or are we going through banks? Are we getting business loans? How are we doing it?
So some through banks, some through, you know, profits or partners, you know what I mean? Like our mentor is one of our real estate partners, and he's done an awesome job of, man, really showing us the benefits of owning real estate and the profitability in owning real estate. Like, so he, you know, Daryl Freeman, man, is an awesome dude. Y'all might want to have him on. He dope, for real. Yeah, look him up, man. But man, he's showing us the real estate route and the benefits of it.
There's always more. Like, that's why, like, it's like in everything in life, it's like, there's always more to everything. And it's like Apple, if everything failed for Apple today, they have billions of dollars worth of real estate. McDonald's, like in that founding, it was like, you're not in the restaurant business no more. You're in the real estate business now. Yep. Right. And even like when Derek, when he was explaining like the mixed use property, he was telling us, he was like, now it's not a restaurant place, it's a real estate place.
Yeah.
So it's like, if all else fails, you still own the property.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Make money off of that. Like I said, worst case scenario, you go out of business, everything failed. You still own a property. You can rent it to somebody else.
Yeah, and you kind of have a short-term play and a long-term play, right? Yeah. Like the restaurant is now, and hopefully it stays long-term, but that real estate is always going
to
be there.
But I don't even want that to, because like people don't understand how much land Apple's buying. Apple is buying so much land from their headquarters, but even like just, they have a bunch of land from different office spaces and stuff like that. And it's like, they're not doing that. They could lease, they could rent.
Yeah.
But it's like, they're strategically, they understand that the property goes up over the course of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And another thing too, since we came into gentrifying neighborhoods, so we're coming in early, and as we know, that property is appreciating. Yeah. So after that lease might come up, and they might say, well, look, I need to double your rent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because this is the new market for that area. And so we have more control. Yep. For some of our core locations, we have more control. So, you know, As Mo said, Daryl Freeman helped us understand, really truly understand that.
No, that's dope.
Did y'all ever think about, or are y'all franchising?
Yeah, so that's in play. Man, I mean, you know, multiple streams of revenue, right? So
yeah,
that's in play for us. It's a process though. Like we don't, like Clint, all of us always say, like, we're not just going to jump in and do something without doing the research and having the proper, you know, knowledge to to take a task on, because we don't want to put out a mediocre product. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, but yeah, franchising is in play for us. Yeah, that's a plan. But we want to make sure it's done right. You know what I mean? The legal is on point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the processes that we have in-house are on point before we jump out there and offer their product for somebody to have to run.
Yeah.
All right. So in the last segment, we're going to talk about where you go from here, scaling, and what's next for you guys. All right. So as far as I want to talk about scaling and branding, things of that nature. So I see you have the sauce to say. That's another thing I like about you guys, is that you're not limiting yourself to just being a pizza business. It's like you have merch. You got the merch on. You got the merch.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that.
We didn't get there, but we from the same era. So, yeah, like, cream. People who've been with us for a while, you know, we had the cream, you know, credit rules everything around us. So when we saw the cream, I'm like, I like these guys. Yeah. Man. The pizza rules everything around
me. Yeah. So what's the scaling model for you guys as far as going forward in the future?
So coming into 2020, we've started our planning, right? So we had we did a retreat, like the three of us, and just kind of sat down, and basically we outlined our business model. So we had outlined all of our business units, corporate stores, franchising, the sauce company, with media, trying to keep them all together, and a couple more, right? And we basically said, okay, this is our focus, right? This is our focus on the corporate stores. We know what we need to do. For franchising, to get to franchising, we know what we need to do. These are the steps. This is the process to get us to be able to franchise. So for us, it's, you know, building an international brand, right? You know, one thing we did was, you know, as part of our research, we couldn't find any, like, black-owned, like, national chains, like, restaurant chains. Mm-hmm. It was like we literally couldn't find it. It was crazy because it's, like, it has to be – doing this thing significantly. We just couldn't find any. So that was part of our motivation as well, to like build something that's, you know, that great, to that scale, that's internationally recognized. So that's part of our goal. So kind of touch on it from that perspective.
No, you got it.
So branding. How important is branding for you guys? Like, what's your thoughts on, like, even your social media stuff and the merch and all of that? Like, that's a intentional, obviously.
Yeah.
How big is that for you guys?
I think that branding for us is about, you know, connecting with people outside of just our pizza. We want people to understand that Slim & Huskies is a story. Three, you know, young black dudes that have ambition and, you know, a good taste for food. And also, you know, a good heart for, you know, rebuilding our communities and changing the narrative. So we want to take people along for the ride. And so it's a little bit different from the trucking company where, you know, we were very busy trying to get people to see us as everything but, you know, a black business. You know, we wanted to, because, you know, in Nashville, you know, I think a couple people might have not let us in their homes a few times to do estimates because, you know, they just didn't trust the face.
They right? literally, you know, like, you can't come in?
I called the wrong number. I'm sorry.
So, you know, when we got started with this, we almost had the same mentality until we started to, you know, get the reaction from the community that really showed us, like, man, we're proud of you guys. Keep on going. You know, we needed this, right? So now we're at a point where this is who we are. We just recently changed all of our branding from, you know, we had a tractor and wheat, you know, because the story is basically, you know, we're from Tennessee, you know, a lot of local farm goods and, you know, people know, you know, Tennessee for that. However, we grew up, you know, in the city and listened to hip hop, you know, Master P, UGK, you know what I mean, T.I. Like, we listen to these artists, so we're a lot different. So, you know, when you see this logo, then you think rural, but when you walk in, it's like a juxtaposition where it's like, man, what just hit me? You know what I'm saying? So now we change the branding to where it's the three characters of us, and we're just carrying you along on the story to, you know, walking in purpose to sell pizza, to sell hope and vision, and show people that, you know, if you've got a product, you know, we've got pizza, but, you know, you can break things out of the product that you're selling to create other streams of revenue, like sauce and like real estate, you know, and like merchandise. And we just want people to go along for the ride from a lifestyle standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, and your community give back is important. Like, that's something that we love because it's something we do in our community too. Can y'all talk about the movie theater experience? Because when I spoke to Mo, I was like, yo, bro, how y'all doing that? Like, y'all rent a movie theater out and bring the community out? Well, how's that work?
That's Clint. That's our Clint right there.
Yeah, we established a partnership with, because in our locations, we've got, you know, images of, you know, things we all grew up loving, like just music videos and different, you know, movies and sitcoms from the night. Like, we've got Dwayne Wade and Whitley painted on our bathroom doors as silhouettes, you know? And so, you know, the culture was loving it. So we were like, you know what? Like, let's extend the experience outside of the doors of our restaurant. So we partnered with a local independent theater, and we just showed, you know, movies from our past. That people, you know, you would think everybody's seen these movies, but you'll be surprised. The first one we did was Juice, and you'll be surprised how many people had never seen Juice, and not just black people, but you know what I'm saying, but like other cultures that are embracing it and coming in our restaurants. Like, you know what? I've heard about that, but I never really dived in. So if these guys are, you know, hosting a movie, let me go check it out, and we give free pizza, partner with local alcohol companies. They pour free alcohol, and then Mo, you know, he was like, man, we can't just show them the movie. We got to have call to actions, you know. When somebody, you know, a certain part of the movie, like, everybody got to stand up and say this, you know. So we just try to.
That's dope.
We just try to give people something new and different. And that's the great part about being an entrepreneur and a young business owner. It's like, man, when you got confidence in what you do, like, you can do whatever comes to your mind, you know.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and on a house party when we did a 90s dress, like, you know what I mean, who can't. So we just did a contest, like, coming in 90s here.
Who had the hot top?
None of us.
Nah, it's important because it's like, you don't want to just limit yourself. And that's something that, shout out to our brother Chad, 85 South Show. He's one of the business partners of 85 South. And he told us, he was like, stop calling it Earn Your Leisure Podcast. This was months ago. He's like, stop calling it Earn Your Leisure Podcast. He's like, we stopped calling it 85 South Podcast a long time ago because we realized we're bigger than just a podcast. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, you're bigger, yeah, than just a podcast. And he's true, and it's right, because it's like, now we got merch. We got an online school platform. We do live events. We do workshops. And it's like, that's why I like Slim and Huskies. You have pizzeria, but it's smaller. It's not like pizza. Slim and Huskies pizza. Like, because then it's like, you're just going to be known for pizza.
But
Slim and Huskies, and it's like, you can do a variety of different things, right? Yeah. And I think that's important for people to understand too. It's like, don't just limit yourself in a corner, because now it's kind of hard to break out of that.
Yeah. And y'all always think in business, man. When I walked in, I saw the box. I said, yeah, they brought pizza. And you said, yo, we're working on the frozen one. And I'm like, I see the bigger play.
Yeah, man.
I see where y'all going. Supermarkets next?
Yeah, we got we're working with a food scientist right now to, you know, formulate the product, you know, and get it perfect. The same way with when we were building this pizza, it was like, we can't just freeze these things and ship them out. You know, we got to do it the right way. We got to do it how DiGiorno's does it, you know, even better.
So the pizza lab is still open?
No, it's not still open. Oh. Well, fortunately now, we've got, you know, multiple kitchens we can just get in and, you know, and work in. So
what's the deal with the sauces?
Oh man, so
sauce.
So, man, we you know, we grew up, you know, dipping pizza and ranch at school, and, you know what I'm saying, and your burgers and
is that a southern thing, man?
You know what I mean? Nah, I don't know if it's southern, you know what I mean? But you know what I'm saying, like, man, we just grew up with, I mean, sauces. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what brings the flavor to just our food anyway, like, mm-hmm, black folks. I mean, it's about the sauce. You ain't got
to know about the sauce.
You know what
I mean? And life in general.
They
can get the ingredients, but they ain't got the sauce.
Man. So we call these drizzles. We call them drizzles. You know what I mean? It's about, you know, drizzling, you know, the sauces on the pizza. You know what I mean? So, but no, we got these on a website. People order. We ship it out. Few of them in stores, but this is the next play. It's like, again, we're always thinking about how to pull some of the things that we have in our business, pull them out and separate them and build value. create value.
So the sauce is an independent entity.
Yeah, and they're not just for pizza either. So, you know, you can put the balsamic in your steak recipe, the ranch, you know, in your mashed potatoes, the garden butter on your veggies, the pineapple chipotle on your ribs and barbecue, the stone ground peach mustard on your roasted chicken.
The honey mayo. Yo, the CMO is now talking.
The honey mayo on your stir fry. You know what I'm saying? So it ain't just about pizza. It's just about, you know.
You done gave him a sauce and a dish to go with. This, this guy's on point. Yeah.
You can make anything good if you got the right sauce.
Don't get lost then.
Don't get lost.
I like that. I like that.
Yo, we kind of skipped over the unique menu, man. That's one of my favorite parts of your story. Can y'all tell us some of the items on the menu, man, so people can know what they expect when they come into Slippin' Husky?
We wanted to be creative with the menu.
Yeah. You know,
man. We wanted to, again, bring our era into Slippin' Huskies. So we thought it would be unique and Slippin' Huskies-esque, if I would, to say, instead of a pepperoni pizza, it's a Roni, Roni, Roni. Instead of a supreme, it's just a supreme. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The smoking herb with chicken, smoking herb with salmon. You know what I mean? So to bring like subtle aspects of the culture, if you
smoking herb.
Yeah. I mean, so what is the I got five on it? What's that?
So it's a cheese pizza.
So the I got five. So it's like five different things.
Yeah.
All right. These young kids might know what I got five on it.
They don't have no idea.
I think. And last one is nothing but a. It's a vegan pizza?
That's another one of the parts of our lineup is that we are very, you know, health-focused. So, you know, we've got something for everybody. If you want to come in there and just load it up and knock yourself out, we got that for you. But, you know, we also have, you know, a lot of healthy vegetables, you know what I'm saying, that we push on a day-to-day. So we definitely wanted to give, you know, the vegans something to, you know, they could take ownership in. And even like our smoking herb with salmon, it's our pescatarian. You know, option. There's not a lot of places that have smoked salmon.
That sounds good. Huh? I got to check
it out. This might be the first time we do an episode and actually go with y'all to the restaurant after. We're about to make history today.
Gentlemen, thank you, man. Thank you. So, can we call it Cashville? Is that like what they still calling that? Or?
Man, Charlie Cashville. He called the Ville.
All right. So, when we touch down, you got to take care of us, man.
For sure.
I appreciate it. Wait, he told the people how to contact you, social media and website and all of that.
Everything is at Slimmin' Huskies. Huskies is H-U-S-K-Y-S. Slimmin' Huskies.
Went to a state near you. We got Cali coming up?
Absolutely. Sacramento will be open this summer. Memphis will be open this summer.
Downtown Nashville, which is historical, on Broadway, black restaurant down there, man. It's huge.
We'll be in a complex that's basically we're right behind the National African American Music Museum that's going to be opening up in Nashville, Tennessee, this late this fall. And, man, we've got aggressive plans. And, you know, we just hope that, you know, we continue to provide the best piece of service and love to the communities we're coming to.
Awful.
Dope. Yeah. Troy, some housekeeping items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. Y'all know that's our Proud to Pay program. Obviously, you know that it has changed a little bit because we wanted to give y'all more. Shout out to Manny B for giving us an inspiration to actually give more to our people. So everybody that's joined, you know, our top tier, y'all get access to our Earn Your Leisure University. That is our online school where we do 3 webinars a week, real estate related on Mondays, guest webinars on Wednesdays, and Shadi and myself do a business podcast, business webinar every Thursday. And we got EYL Espanol, so y'all already know what time it is with that, man. We were trying to make sure that we encompass all communities, not just the English speaking community, but people of Latin and Hispanic descent. So we want to involve everybody so that they can have the knowledge and the know-how to get involved in the world of business. And shout out to everybody that's been purchasing our merch. We got our new merch. We almost had to sell it off our back the other day on Earn Your Leisure. .com. So the merch is out, and shout out to everybody that has been hitting up our partnership with our brand resumes. That is going pretty well. So like I said, we like to empower entrepreneurs, but we always want to think about the everyday person who actually has to apply and needs a job. So, you know, shout out to everybody that's supporting.
Yeah, for sure. Shout out to the great city of Atlanta.
Ooh.
We just wrapped up a 2-day run out here. It's always good to be back in the A.
Yeah. Y'all got another spot coming in the A too?
Yeah, man, on Metropolitan. 581 Metropolitan.
These dudes ain't playing.
right by the AUC, man. So it's got a walk-up window. Come get your late night. Come get your lunch. Your cinnamon rolls.
We're going to test it all.
shout out to Atlanta. And Tennessee, we definitely got to come to Tennessee for sure, man.
Yeah, man.
Nashville, Memphis, shout out to everybody in Tennessee. And, thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.